Welcome to The Upshot. It's Ulti World Disc Golf's podcast on the latest happenings in the sport. Jamie Thomas here doing a solo show. Charlie is on vacation this week. He finally got to get out of New York a little bit, get into some nature. So we hope that he's enjoying some off-the-grid time after having been cooped up in his apartment for months on end. Wishing him the best out there. Here, this week, now, it's happening. Disc golf is coming back. We are less than 2 days away from the return of the Disc Golf Pro Tour, then the Dynamic Disc Open out in Emporia, Kansas. Going to be taking on Emporia Country Club, which is usually the host site and host course for the Glassblown Open on the National Tour, which, of course, as you've been following along, has been postponed for the season. So this is the first and only, at this point, tour that we're going to see this year. Or I should say the Pro Tour is going to be the only tour, and this is going to be the first event since the last Pro Tour event, Waco Annual Charity Open, which happened back in March. I am super excited. I am flying up to Bend tomorrow to join Nate and Val for the commentary. We're going to be kicking off on Friday. Looks like it's going to be 2 p.m. local time start for the feature card in MPO, which is going to be Eric Oakley, Ricky Wysocki, Eagle McMahon, Jeremy Colling. We usually try to check in with the chase card a little bit towards the beginning. So if you're a fan of Drew Gibson, Paul McBeth, Simon Lazat, or Nico LaCastro, make sure you're there for the beginning of the broadcast so you can see those guys tee off. And of course, as the Disc Golf Network and the Disc Golf Pro Tour have done all year, the FPO rounds will follow the MPO rounds. So we'll bounce back to see Katrina Allen, Paige Hsu, Rebecca Cox, and Paige Pierce tee off at 4 p.m. local time in Emporia. I apologize. I don't have on hand the exact time that the broadcast is going to start yet. We actually have our final production meeting this evening, today being Wednesday, the 24th. So I'll find out all those fine details. But rest assured, we will have that information up for you on the site, and you can also check all the Disc Golf Pro Tour's official social media accounts. They'll keep you updated as well. So, yeah, good live show. We're very excited for it. Hope you guys are all tuned in. Hope if anybody had to pause their subscription to the Disc Golf Network that they get in and can see it happening live. Now, today, I'm going to talk with Robert McCall. You guys will know him from a whole bunch of the Smashbox live shows that he's done over the past few years. He's also the marketing director over at Dynamic Disc and just an all-around great guy. Great player as well. Has carried four digits on his name before for a rating. He was a sponsored player for a while and then started moving on to the industry side of the game, and just really enjoy talking golf with him. So, fair warning, we get a little off script, we go a little long, we have some good chats about a whole bunch of things, but he's going to help me kind of preview the Dynamic Disc Open in depth, talk about some of the changes to the course, talk about what happened in the interim between canceling the GBO and setting up the DDO. Whole lot of good stuff. I don't want to step on any of that thunder, spoil any of that fun, so we'll leave that for him. That's going to be most of the show today, frankly, and then if you'll join us in the subscriber bonus segment, something really cool happening, invited my buddy Sean Jack to come talk about, well, just talk about pitching disc golf companies and kind of how the conversation around getting sponsorships from brands, both that create products directly for the sport, as well as other brands who are going to start trying just to market to us as a demographic in general. So really interesting conversation. Always like to hear what he has to say. Hope you'll be a subscriber here at Ulti World Disc Golf. Only $4 a month, $1 a week, and you get to hear great in-depth current conversations like we're going to have with Mr. Sean Jack. All right. That's pretty much all I have right now. I'm going to let the interviews do the talking for most of this episode. Remember to please always send your thoughts, your reactions, your questions, anything like that to upshot@ultiworld.com. And Charlie should be back next week. We'll have a lot to unpack and a lot to talk about. So grab yourself a beverage, sit down, get comfortable. Got a nice interview with Robert McCall coming up. Stick with us. You're on The Upshot. Joining us now on The Upshot, Dynamic Disc Marketing Manager and all-around expert anytime I need to know anything about Emporia or Dynamic Disc or basically what's cool out in the Midwest. Robert McCall joins us. Robert, how's it going, man?
Hey, how's it going, man? I'm doing great. And yeah, I like to consider myself an expert. I do not consider myself an expert at anything, but I appreciate that. That's very nice.
Well, you're going to be an expert on this because the tour is coming back to Emporia all of a sudden. It's not the national tour. It's the Disc Golf Pro Tour with the Dynamic Disc Open, which obviously starts this Friday. First of all, just what's kind of the overall feeling on the ground in Emporia right now? This event kind of came together quickly, and it's been pretty cool to see.
Right. Yeah, things are very interesting in Emporia right now because it feels like a mini GBO, right? You're starting to see people that you haven't seen for a while. Like, I've seen some of our touring players. I saw Kevin Jones wandering around Hammond the other day when Country Club was closed. So a bunch of people that we haven't seen in quite a while. So it feels like we should have all this other stuff happening. You know, we should have the block party getting set up, and we should have the check-in at the Granada, and that's not in place. So yeah, it's kind of obviously for safety reasons. So it's just, yeah, it's a little bit different than we're used to, but we're excited to have disc golf to watch and to be able to provide for people again.
I'm really interested to know how this kind of came about, but first, I mean, we probably shouldn't bury the lead here. GBO, the biggest block party in the sport, and one of the biggest, if not the most attended tournament in the world.
Most attended each year, yeah.
Most attended each year. I mean, it's crazy. We talk about the stats every year on the show, what the population of Emporia swells by 10% during this time, and it's just, it's nuts. You guys do it so big for the tournament. What was it like? What was kind of the feeling when it became evident that that was not going to happen this year?
Man, I think we were all just honestly really bummed about it. We spend, and this is not a joke or an exaggeration, we spend pretty much the entire year getting ready for the next year's GBO. So let's say, you know, early May is the last day of the tournament. We'll take a day or two to, you know, rest, recover a little bit, and then our next meeting is a postmortem of this GBO. What did we do well? What do we need to improve on? And then we start working on the next GBO, I mean, that next week. That's what part of Doug's full-time responsibilities are. So to have put in all this work and to have some really special things in place, we're excited to share with the disc golf community. And to just not get to have that happen. I mean, we're devastated is probably a bit of an overstatement, but it's just like, I mean, the wind's out of your sails, you know? We were thrilled about it. Don't get to do it now. So we just kind of came to terms with it's going to be a different year in Emporia. And that's not just an effect on Dynamic Discs. The city of Emporia benefits greatly from having everyone come into town. Like, we love to roll out the red carpet for players. If you're a disc golfer and you go to a local restaurant, you're more than likely going to get asked how your round is going, how your week has been, everything like that. Emporia really does like to really roll out the red carpet for disc golfers. But yeah, we were really sad about that. And then kind of out of the blue, when we found out that some sanctions were going to be lifted and Kansas kind of had a plan in place to reopen as the nation is starting to do that as well. We were in communication with the Disc Golf Pro Tour about some other events this year, and they just kind of said, hey, what do you guys think about making this happen and being the first kind of reopen on the Disc Golf Pro Tour? And if you know Jeremy Rusko, you know that he jumps at something like that, at an opportunity to do something and to do something well. And so we said yes, and what usually takes a year, because it's quite a bit smaller event, we hit the ground running, and just about a month from when we found that out, we're going to run this event for some of the top players in the world.
Wow. How is the city behind you guys in the same way? I mean, obviously not to the same scale and, you know, with all the restrictions and everything, but, you know, principally, how does the city factor in, because that's such an important part of the GBO experience?
Right. It's difficult this time around because so many things are still closed or partially closed. So Radius is, you know, basically everyone's favorite place to eat in Emporia. They're only doing curbside right now. A lot of our restaurants are only doing curbside. Things are different for us. Like, for my wife and I, normally we'd have a touring player or two come and stay in our guest bedrooms, and, you know, we'd hang out and all that stuff. And this time around, it's like, I mean, I'll wave at him when I see him and talk to him and stuff, but we're just having to be a lot more cautious this time around. And so the city is, I think, as behind the tournament as they can be without actually being able to open its doors fully and invite people in just like we do most of the time. So, like I said, everything is a little bit different. The course is only a little bit different. We still have the wind. I guess that's probably the least different thing that we've got right now.
It's like the number one thing in Kansas, as long as you have the wind, you're good to go for a competitive tournament.
Things will be fine. God. Oh, man. When we have to like 10-mile-an-hour days, it's like, wow, this is great, guys. It's basically still. So hopefully we'll have a couple of those this weekend where it's not just gusting, you know.
Not just a redo of the 2019 Glass Blown Open.
Oh my goodness! I mean, yeah,
we'll definitely get to that.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm curious though, when you compare June, July time to April when the Glass Blown Open normally happens, you know, what's the kind of top line weather read for a golfer? Is it going to be roughly the same? Obviously, it's going to be hotter. You know what? Any differences in how the course is going to play?
Sure. Definitely hotter come this time of year. We've been kind of the low 90s for several days. Most of the time GBO will be in the 70s, maybe low 80s. But it'll still be cool in the morning. Like, people will still wear long sleeves in the morning at that time. There's no need for long sleeves in Emporia right now at basically any time. So it will be definitely a little bit warmer. We usually have a little bit more humidity at GBO time than we'll have now. It rained a little bit last week and then a little bit a couple weeks before that, but this week has been pretty dry for the most part, and so it's a bit of a dry heat that makes the breeze actually kind of help you out a little bit as far as how you feel. And then as far as how the course is playing, Country Club is pretty darn green right now. I mean, it's in pretty fantastic shape considering we're into our hotter months. And so I think skips are going to be, if you find the fairway, skips are going to be just as prevalent as before. But if you're playing into grass that's a little bit more grown in now than it normally is, we don't see these huge, you know, flare skips. So you can kind of play to sit where you hit for the most part. All in all, the course is going to play just a little bit different, but it looks fantastic right now. Super nice right now.
I feel like that's the silver lining with a lot of the dual use golf course, disc golf course mm-hmm. setups. I was actually playing Glen Eagles the other day with Sean Jack and a couple others, and we had one of those. We talk about wind and you talk about, you know, skips and whatnot. Kind of similarly, like, we were like, man, first of all, we were reminiscing on, or, you know, not having the SFO was a bummer, but being right out and getting in the wind was kind of like, oh man, I feel that. So what, I guess the big question I want to know, because I just went back and watched all the 2019 GBO final round coverage to kind of mm-hmm. prep for the broadcast this weekend. And what you just said stuck out. Like, if you hit the first cut or the rough generally, it was pretty sticky. If you hit the fairway, it was just like your disc was on skates. Do you expect it to be more like that because of the heat and the wind? You also said there's some rain. I'm trying to read in between the lines here.
Sure. So I would say the rough is going to be about like it normally has been. Yeah, when you hit that, you're not really going places. But for the portions of the course that play on golf fairways, yeah, you can still get those really big skips. I don't think it's going to be quite as strong as it would have been in April, but I mean, it's still short grass. It's still maintained, a few times a week. And so even if it's a little bit more humid outside, even if we've had some rain, you're going to be pretty likely to get big skips off of that, especially if you're throwing into a head or a crosswind. Hole 14 at the Country Club comes to mind. That's the one that Simon threw that ridiculously long roller on that went OB long, you know, like, yeah, 700 whatever feet away. That one has fairway on the left side that if you just leave your disc on a little too much angle on that backhand side, it slopes toward the cart path, which is OB, and it's really easy to find, you know, a rocket skip off of that. So players are going to have to be pretty conservative, but they're familiar with the course enough to know those spots now. So it's not really unexpected. It's just that's a new course element. That's a course element that you just kind of have to play for at this point.
They can already factor that in, huh?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So is this the same course that we would have seen for GBO? And, it, you know, I guess if so or if not, it doesn't matter. What are some of the big changes? I know 16's got a pretty special something happening to it this mm-hmm. time around. Any other kind of big things in the works or being finished up at this point?
Sure. So the plan for GBO this year was to have two rounds at the Country Club and then two rounds at Jones Gold. Jones Gold is a combination of Jones East and Jones West. We would have lost each of those as tournament courses for the sake of the Gold course, but it's just a big safari layout, and I think it's well designed. It's a, for me, a welcome change from the Country Club. Still pretty long, but OB in a lot of places where you just kind of have to be careful about where you're throwing your tee shots. A few more trees here and there that you have to navigate. Very, very scoreable in my opinion. So we were excited to see some of the top players take that on. You know, Eric McCabe and I will go throw that, and we know what we score out there, but I wanted to see somebody, you know, well into double digits, and I think that would have been very possible. But out of the Country Club, there are a couple of changes that stand out. So hole one was, to the pin from last year, was the easiest par five on the course, and it was probably the easiest hole relative to par on the course, or at least very close to it. It played right around 1,000 feet, downhill tee shot, and if you can throw a 380-foot hyzer, you can throw two of those and have about a 200-foot approach to the basket. And it was just a really easy hole to play for four, assuming that you didn't get really aggressive. That pin now is in a long placement, about 250 feet or 225 feet behind the old pin. Downhill green that slopes away from the players on their third shot. So distance is at a premium, but then speed control for their third is really going to make the difference on that hole. I'm excited to see how that hole plays out. I would be shocked if we see any threes on it, even with the distance that, you know, our top competitors have. That's one big change. Hole nine has a new basket placement that's farther into the woods line. So last year it was, we kind of introduced that new tee that was coming out of a tunnel. You've got a cart path OB on the left and then tall grass OB on the right. The right is all safe now. So it gives you a bailout area, but it's not, if you're over there, you're not having a good time. It's basically pitch out or try and do something really stupid. And the approach is a little bit more guarded now. So that's a change on nine, but I would say the biggest course change obviously is the wall on 16. 16 is the island green, one of my favorite holes in disc golf. And it plays to the front of the island. You know, you probably only have to throw it about 320, 330 feet somewhere in there. But we put a pretty substantial wall on the back portion of that green so that we could, I think, entice some more players to go for that shot. But as a result, we took the basket from the middle of the green or the back right side of the green and moved it to the front center of the green. And so if you want to get on the green and just smash the back wall, you know, throw whatever you want to that's going to hit the green, hit the wall, and sit down, that's fine. But you've got an absolute death putt coming back to the front of the green. And it's probably, I don't know, it's probably 30 or 35 feet away. So players are going to have to control that speed into the green, possibly even more than ever. But I do think we'll see more players go for it because it's easy enough to find the green now with that backstop. Everything else is relatively similar to the last several years. And I think scores are really just going to be dependent on how windy it is, because there's not, I mean, there are aggressive ways to play the course. There are conservative ways to play the course, but I think, you know, we'll probably see kind of those double digit rounds, 10, 11 under would be pretty solid. That'll put you in contention, I would think.
Yeah. I'm interested. So the wall on 16, it's not quite to the backside of the green. Like it, from what I saw in the pictures, it looks like the wall is actually closer to the pin, closer to the tee than last year's pin placement. Is that relatively correct?
It's very close to where last year's pin placement was. So yeah, it cuts off the back portion of the island. I don't think that was the plan in the first place, but once they decided to move the pin to the front of the island, I think that started making a little bit more sense.
Gotcha. So if somebody lands behind this wall, are they going to be marked OB? I know that's a really small percent chance, but you know, these pros, I feel like every time a tournament plans for something, that's such a small percent chance it happens. It's like, Eagle throws this massive spike right behind the wall. Is he putting in bounds back over the wall?
Yeah, fantastic question. And I don't know the answer, to be honest with you. I would have to, I'd have to go check the rule book or maybe even consult Doug, because I'm sure he's thought of that. I would assume that he would be safe. Because I don't think the wall is marked OB, so he'd be on land and still be able to play, but he wouldn't be having a fun time because it's not a short wall and it's putting back toward the water. I think it's going to be an interesting change to see if we see more players go for it or if we see even more layups at this point. I don't know.
I'm very curious. You know, I think, look, I'll be candid. I have said on this podcast before, I've said my least favorite part about GBO is Emporia Country Club. I think like the event's great. The tournament's great. You guys that run the event are top notch in the sport. And I've just felt like the course has lacked in the past. But the thing that you guys do that's really cool is you just keep going back and going over it and going over it. And that must be nice, A, with the country club itself, that you guys get continued freedom and leeway to kind of adjust and make it, because like I can't think of many golf courses that are just going to be like, yeah, disc golfers, we have an island. I'm not sure if the course itself uses it, but here's this island, build a wall on it.
Right. Yeah. We've had incredible cooperation from the country club and the ownership there and the manager there. Fantastic to work with, obviously, because they allowed us to put a wall up on that island. What it serves as on the golf course is an island tee pad that plays kind of back over toward what is the disc golf 17's pin. Okay. So you tee off from
that's there, and then play.
That's exactly right.
On that second shot. Okay.
Very nice. That's exactly right. It's like a, I don't know, 190 yards shot or something like that. But yeah, they're just really easy to work with. And yeah, they, for the most part, take our requests and say, okay, we can do this, we can't do this, how can we work together? But a lot of times they just say, all right, yeah, we can do that. And kind of to your point about Emporia Country Club, we've heard feedback about the country club before. People will come play it and then they'll say, well, it's no this, you know, it's no Idlewild, it's no MVP, it's no, Maple Hill, it's no whatever. Yeah, we're aware of that. You know, if we had the chance to, like, if we had the land and the resources to make, you know, a Maple Hill, an Idlewild, a densely wooded course, so we could kind of have options on either side of the spectrum, trust me, we would do it, and it would be fantastic. We'd be stoked to do it. But we live in the Midwest. We just don't have that much land like that. And so, kind of like you said, our goal is to take the resources that we have and make them as good as we can, improving year over year over year. So part of that postmortem that I said we do after the GBO, once the course is in place, we watch all the competitors play, and then we say, okay, what course changes do we need to make next year? And it's always something, whether it's a different OB line, whether it's opening up some OB so that there are scramble opportunities. Yeah, I would love to have a course like that. However, we're working within the constraints that we have.
There's no giant Christmas tree farm with lots of elevation and lakes and things right in your backyard in Kansas.
Those sorts of comments make me laugh so much. Like, did we just drive into the same place? We there are some rolling hills and they're great. Like we love the scenery here for what it is in Kansas, but it's just not like it. We don't have forests that are really dense and will allow us to put disc golf courses on them. So yeah, we work with what we've got, and I think considering what we do have, I'm really proud of the work that that Eric McCabe does year over year, working with Doug, working with the country club to improve it as much as we can.
And here's the thing, at the end of the day, because I think you could say a lot of the same things about, well, a lot of the same things are said about Winthrop and the USDGC as well, that like the course is probably the most complained about component of the event. And you just got to work with what you have. But nevertheless, at both USDGC and GBO, the finishes are always incredibly exciting and just seem to get more and more so each year. I mean, if you look back at 2019, you were in the booth. I mean, let me just ask you before I do any recap on this.
Yeah.
What do you remember most from the 2019 battle in either MPO or FPO?
Oh, last year was wild, man. Oh my goodness. Okay, so just as you were asking that question, I'm sitting here in front of my microphone with my hand on my face because that's what I was doing all last year. As I watched it unfold, it was just, oh my goodness, it was crazy. So we did we followed the women's coverage first. And I mean, there's just a big back and forth between Paige and Katrina last year. Trading strokes, OB controversy on hole 12. Then hole 16, Paige makes that big putt and then gets a courtesy warning. And then Katrina throws her mini and she gets a courtesy warning. It was just kind of a big mess. But coming right down to it, on 18, I mean, Katrina executed, like, I don't remember what that short tee is, but it's, I don't know, it can't be much shorter than 400 feet. It's probably 380-ish.
Wind, like 413 by UDisc.
That sounds right. Yeah, that sounds right. It's not a small shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when coming off of the water, she executes, I think it was a D2, just flex, holding over to the right exactly as long as it needed to, skipping up, like playing into that hill well and skipping up. And then, I mean, Katrina, fantastic player. Known for missing those short putts every once in a while, just stepped up and canned it. What a cool battle between two of the best players in our sport, right? So that was only part of the tournament. So that was awesome. We loved watching that battle. Then coming down the stretch, watching so many players jockey for position. Ultimately, Paul with the he had poison ivy on his arm. He looked like his arm had a mind of its own, like it was growing disproportionately to the rest of his body.
Yeah.
He comes down this stretch, makes every putt that he needs to, and takes it away. It's like, I don't know. That was one of those situations where it's like when Tiger's in contention at the Masters. I'm not saying that Paul McBeth is Tiger or anything, but this is the feeling that it feels like in disc golf sometimes, where if McBeth is in contention, you can't bet against him. You just can't do it. And it was just another one of those, like, confirmation that he's the best in the game right now. He showed it. And he dug deep and earned that win. So I loved watching just as a fan, but then also getting to call the action for both of those finishes at GBO last year.
Yeah, and obviously you guys did a phenomenal job in the booth, let me be the first to say. You know, first in this interview in 2020, because I'm sure you've been told that many times before.
Appreciate that.
What strikes me is the FPO battle that you just discussed, that was all in the last 6-7 holes. Mm-hmm. Like, we can even talk about first three and a half rounds leading up to this. You're talking about Paige Pierce, 12 through 18, with all that drama and a very heated battle between two competitors who just, they're very intense on the course and they battle each other all the time. So you just, you know, right, how that kind of builds up over time. Paige goes three down during that stretch. But then Katrina, just to cap it off, like you were saying, she only putted 56% from C1X during that round, including the 16 debacle.
Yes.
Which let Paige back in. But then to hit that last putt and just to claim it back by one stroke, it just phenomenal, like gutsy, when you have to have it, you have it kind of thing. And I think it's so interesting too, because both Katrina and Paul shot over par in that final round and won despite the people that they were battling with, you know, Paul battling with Ricky and Eagle shooting even or better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think gutsy is the exact right word when you talk about Katrina's performance there, but also, all right, if you're a competitive disc golfer, you know that when you're putting well, usually you're playing well. There are not a ton of days where you make every putt that you look at, but you're just throwing so poorly that you know, you don't shoot that great. A lot of times when you're putting well, you're playing well, and vice versa is true. I've had a few rounds like this where you're throwing very well, but you just can't, you know, finish the hole. You can't make your birdie putts or whatever. But
like putting is starting.
Exactly, yeah. But putting is so much of a confidence thing. It's so much of a mental battle that, especially for Katrina, like you said, who did not putt well that round, to focus up the one time she absolutely had to have it. And can that, like, that's what you dream of as a disc golfer, of being in the situation where you get to prove that, like, this is the reason that I'm here. That was fantastic. And then, yeah, like you said, with Paul, Ricky, and Eagle all going back and forth, like, it's, I thought Macbeth was probably going to win just because of the way he was playing, but you just can't count any of those guys out. And having a little bit of parity in the sport is one of my favorite things that we've had in the sport over the last several years. You have players who you're going to see at the top, but now we have even more challengers who are kind of, they're creeping up there. You know, they can win a tournament. They can win a major. I mean, look at James Conrad last year.
What a heartbreaking final round he had. And then he would go on to become the U.S. champion later.
Exactly.
On.
Exactly. So mental toughness, I think, is probably the most underrated attribute of our top disc golfers that doesn't really get talked about. We see them throw these huge shots. We see them can these huge putts. But if they're not mentally tough, I mean, there are, and I'm not going to say any names, but there are disc golfers out there with physical tools to dominate any disc golf tournament, but they don't have the mentality to go with it right now. So to get to watch our top pros execute that in our backyard to really display their mental toughness, I mean, that's what I live for. That's what I love to watch as a disc golfer and as a fan, you know?
I am 100% with you, but this question just kind of popped into my mind as you're saying this. Is that because we're so on the inside? Like, is that the disc golf equivalent of a pitching duel in the MLB? And then, like, the casual fans, like, I don't want any of that. I don't want to see this mental battle. I just want to see Simon throw 500 feet. I just want to see, you know, this massive roller. Or can everybody really appreciate that?
I think maybe so. It might be a little bit more of an insider thing, just because you've spent enough time. We've both spent enough time around competitive disc golf to know, and played some competitive disc golf at least, to know how it feels to be standing over a difficult shot, not execute, and then have it ruin the rest of your round. I've done that who knows how many times. I don't even want to try and count. But I do think it's something that I wish we were able to display a little bit more. That's the difference between top players and second tier, third tier casual players. It's the same in golf. There are people out there with beautiful golf swings. I mean, mechanics that would just put somebody like, you know, David Duval to shame. But he goes out and shoots 59s and 58s while they shank it all over the course and, you know, finish in the 80s. So, yes, I wish there was some way that we could get a little bit more into that mindset without having stood in that position before. And unfortunately, I don't have a good way to think about that other than to have the commentary be something that leads people down that path and kind of takes them through that journey with the players through what they might be thinking at the time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from my seat on Disc Golf Network, that's why I'm glad to have Nate and Val and, you know, to be able to kind of illuminate that. And, you know, you and Terry Miller doing the commentary at GBO last year and in many other places as well. You guys have a pedigree behind you as well. You understand how to play in those kind of battles. Interesting. So you bring up tiers.
Yeah.
And I think this is interesting because there's a couple things going on. I don't know if you saw any of the Goat Hill, the challenge at Goat Hill footage, but I just got a chance to watch that. And, you know, without spoiling too much, Anthony Barella has a round that, like, you write a Hollywood movie script around. Like, honestly, forget it.
Yeah,
if anybody wants to write a script, just stop. Barella already wrote the script. You can just write what he did. All the way to
just
things happen. Yeah. Go watch it.
That's right.
But
he's unbelievable, man. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, he's one of those guys. He's got that flash in his game. He throws ridiculously far. He's got a little swag to him with his style. And he came in fourth at GBO last year.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Allen came in third at GBO last year. She came in second this past weekend, bringing in Goat Hill again. Both of them from Arizona. Neither of them can come to the Dynamic Disc Open.
Right.
Crazy.
Super unfortunate.
So, you know, I guess one big, and that's one way of touching on the topic of the travel restrictions and, you know, some of the big name players, but how do we expect the DD Open to kind of, you know, play Nostradamus a little bit here and unfold? I mean, you have a longer off season. Certainly we're going to see some rust from some players. I can't possibly imagine that everybody's going to come back ready to go super sharp. You've got some people who are going to come, they're not allowed because they weren't able to make the travel arrangements in time with the restrictions. So what are we staring at here this weekend?
Yeah, that's a super good question. And just before we even get into that stuff, I really feel for the people who aren't able to make the trip because of Kansas restrictions. We did everything we could to see if we could get them to be able to make it. And I mean, not just with, you know, tournament officials, with city officials, with state officials. We tried to get testing for those people to say, hey, if you've been in one of these states, could we even just bring them in? We'll pay for the test. We'll do it.
Wow.
But ultimately that didn't work out, which is unfortunate for Arizona, I think Alabama, Arkansas, which, you know, that takes out one of our favorite players, Chris Clemens. And then I think Maryland was the other one. So really weird times that we're in right now. Sad that those players aren't able to make it to the event. Especially like you said, Anthony Barella, Jennifer Allen, players who play well out here. Hopefully one of these days. It probably won't be sooner rather than later, but we'll get past all of it and we will be able to enjoy disc golf as we did before. Until then, we're going to do what we got. We're going to deal with what we've got. All right. So this weekend, I'm going to tell you who I think is in really good form. And that's because he never stops playing disc golf. And his name is Chris Dickerson. He's a robot chicken.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you right now, like, okay, Chris is going to come in and win the event, but I would be absolutely shocked if Chris finishes outside the top four. He's rated fourth in the event. There are people who throw farther than him, who've had success here that he hasn't had. But Chris is one of those guys who's so very methodical, incredible player who has plenty of distance and control. This is, I think, a common misnomer about Emporia Country Club is that you have to throw incredibly far to compete. That's not the case. You could come out and throw no shots over about 410 feet and set yourself up for birdie on nearly every hole. Easy pars on the others if you were pretty darn consistent with that 410 feet. He's one of those guys that is.
Definitely.
And he has more distance than that for sure, but I don't think any of the players need to throw 550 to tame Country Club. It's really just about keeping the disc in bounds and avoiding those big numbers. I'm looking to see what Dickerson's going to do. Obviously, you can't count Macbeth out here. Eagle and Ricky are the number two and number three based on the last few years of finishes. And then you've got dark horses who always perform well out here. Drew Gibson comes to mind. Drew always seems to find the podium or close to it out here. I'm just excited to see these guys throw again. We filmed a duel yesterday with some players from the trilogy teams, and yeah, just watching how far these guys throw and getting to see it in person again, so much fun for me. Yeah, that was super cool. Another thing I'm really looking forward to seeing is, you know, people always talk about Brody Smith and how he's going to adapt, how he's going to perform. He's got the distance, no doubt. I mean, he can throw.
Certainly.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see how he handles these couple of things. It's the wind and, just keeping the disc in bounds. Because, if you could do those things, probably 3 under or so, on a not a super windy day, just kind of a regular wind day, 3 under is going to be 1,000 rated. You don't have to get a ton of birdies to get that. So I'm really interested in seeing how he performs. I do not anticipate that he'll be, you know, in the top 10 or 15, but he's just starting out. And I think a lot of people are going to be looking for, just to kind of see how he finishes up. Then on the women's side, I think we're in for another big battle. I haven't been keeping up with what Paige Pierce and Katrina Allen have been doing during their quarantine time. I don't know if they've been practicing. I don't know if they've been running clinics or traveling or staying put, working on different things. I have no idea. But I know when those two show up here that get ready for fireworks. And I can't wait to see who comes out on top. Then you've got players who could also challenge there. Paige Hsu comes to mind. Rebecca Cox throws pretty darn far in the female field. I think she could challenge if she happens to if she shows up ready to play. And then somebody like Missy Gannon, if she keeps her drives in bounds, she's a fantastic putter, maybe the best putter in the FBO field.
Best in the field.
I don't know, man. If she's not, she's awfully close. Okay. She is a really good putter. Shout out, Missy.
Great. I love that shout out because I know she's a good putter, quality good putter. And I guess I just haven't seen enough of her playing, I guess, for the last year or so. I haven't been able to get out to as many tournaments. So I don't see what's not on the video. But I'm going to start looking for that now because I know she's been talked up as a great putter, and we've seen some evidence of that already.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting. We just did a survey where we surveyed some of the top pros, and I'm trying to pull it up here very quickly. The players who said the best putter in FPO.
Mm-hmm. I think it was Paige Pierce.
They did write Paige Pierce, which...
And she's a fantastic putter, of course.
She's a fantastic putter, but Missy Gannon did get 3 votes in that. She tied with Kristen Tatar in that. And then you pointed out Rebecca Cox, who the players said was the most underrated FPO player on tour right now. So those are two pretty good shout-outs. Missy Gannon also getting a bunch of votes in that underrated player. So people got to start watching out for her is what you're saying here.
People know that Paige Pierce, Katrina Allen can play. They know Paige Hsu can play. She's a world champion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know Holly Finley very well. I have seen her play at, several events. I think she generally performs better in the woods away from windy situations. So while I don't hope this upon her, I don't think she's going to perform quite as well here this week as somebody like a Missy or Rebecca, just because the types of discs that she likes to throw are very understable air discs a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kansas wind just really doesn't work well with those, unless we're talking tailwind, and then it's awesome. but not every hole is like that. So I think all it's going to take for Missy or Rebecca to kind of take that next step up is just, I don't know if it's a mental breakthrough. I don't think it's a physical breakthrough because both of them throw far enough and they play well enough, but I think they need to get one of those wins or one of those really fantastic finishes that gives them the confidence to play at the next level. And I think we could see them kind of at that top. Yeah. In that top group within the next couple of years, both fantastic players, fantastic people. I like them.
Give me a read on Paige Hsu. You're the team manager for all three of the brands, Dynamic, Westside, and Latitude at one point. Is that correct?
That's right.
I'm not misquoting you. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're good.
You know Paige. You know her game. She wins the Las Vegas Challenge National Tour last year and then kind of has some ups and downs on the road. When do you expect to see her kind of return to that like late 2018, early 2019 form that we saw?
Yeah, that's a great question. Last year, I think Paige had a few things working against her that all just kind of came down at the same time. One of them was, I think Paige is one of those people who is exceptionally good at disc golf, but doesn't realize how good she is at disc golf, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we have friends like that in, I don't know, probably every aspect of life. Maybe a musician that you know who's insanely talented, but they're just like, yeah, I play music, you know? That's kind of how Paige Hsu is, incredibly talented at disc golf. I'm not sure she believes it just yet. Even after having won a Worlds, winning that national tour, I think, did give her that little bit of a boost to her confidence. Then she and Grady were engaged, and she had the issue with her van where she was kind of out of off of the tour for a little while because, I mean, where she was living, I won't get into the full story, but a valet messed it up very bad if you're listening and not aware.
Bummer.
And so it just kind of threw her out of the momentum that she had. And it seemed last year like she kind of struggled to get it back. Once she was back to playing, she still threw well. She still putted well. Obviously, I think she's one of the – she may not be the best putter thrower in the FPO field, but she is a very good putter thrower. Just dead straight, easy turnovers, easy hyzers. She excels at that. But once she kind of got thrown off of that and then had, you know, the wedding priorities – at top of mind, I think that just kind of, I don't know, threw her into a bit of a disc golf funk while other outside of disc golf things were happening. So I look for her to bounce back this year. I know she's been practicing quite a bit, and practicing pretty hard, but what it's going to take for Paige to succeed, we've had this conversation, Paige and I have, is for her to know that she can do it, because she can compete. She just has to know that while she's out on the disc golf course. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how she competes out here. She does not throw quite as far as Paige and Paige Pierce and Katrina do, but she's got great accuracy. She's a good putter, and her upshot game is on point. And those things are pretty important out at Country Club.
Definitely. It's so aggressive with the putter too. That's the great thing.
I love it.
It's not like layup putts or layup shots where you're accurate. She's running it. Or at
yes.
least like a 50-50. And hell, she's going to make it. She keeps throwing like that.
That's exactly right.
That's awesome, man. We got kind of like off the script a little bit on what we're going to talk about. But I just really enjoy talking disc golf with you. So in that sense, I want to bring up one more name just because he's been so interesting to me this year.
Yeah.
Tell me how Philo Brathwaite is playing the best golf of his life at 40. I mean,
that's a super good question.
This dude is killing it right now. I think he's top five on Disc Golf Pro Tour points. He's mm-hmm. been all over some coverage. Of course, he went and won out in Samui in the Thailand tournament that he tends to dominate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. We like to talk about the young players coming up and, you know, oh, the next prodigy, the next this person, that person. But Philo is 40 and killing it this year. So smooth.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I think Philo probably has something similar to kind of the Johnny McRae effect, right? Where as they age, everyone else kind of drops off. You know, maybe they lose interest, maybe they get tired, they lose some distance. It seems like those guys just kind of get better with age, you know? And for Philo specifically, I think one thing working in his favor is his mechanics are so sound that he's getting what feels like maximum efficiency out of just a smooth swing. I mean, he can, you know, he can put it out there 480, 500 feet if he needs to, but instead, I think he is best at angles and commitment. I mean, because he starts the disc on fantastic angles when he throws it. Really, really precise. Great thrower of slower speed discs. So he's going to be close to the basket. And then his putting stroke is just very, very consistent. I think Philo's one of those guys that if he allows himself to succeed, I mean, the sky's the limit. He can absolutely compete at the top level because his mechanics are very, very fundamentally sound. Yeah, just a great player. Lanky guy, long levers, and I think he uses them to his full advantage.
How do you like him out here this week? I mean, top 10? Can he do top 5? I mean, look, you got Macbeth, McMahon, Wysocki, Dickerson, Heimberg, Lazat, KJ USA, mm-hmm. Conrad. I mean, I could keep going. But mm-hmm. these guys are, like we're talking about, distance. And you said distance is not everything. It's also keeping it in bounds. Can we expect top 10 out of him this week?
I think you could see him up there, honestly. It really depends on the wind, because there. So on a non-windy day when it's just, you know, calm, we don't know what that is in Emporia, but let's just assume that happened here sometimes. I think you could put Philo in that top 10 easy. Yeah, just because he's so consistent. He's not going to make a lot of big mistakes, not going to take a lot of big numbers. He's going to make a lot of putts inside the circle and quite a few outside as well. But when the wind is up, I think that's when that extra bit of power really helps the power players. Because instead of having to step up to something, you know, wide rim driver, they can throw a fairway and just put that extra bit of power on it. That's, I think, instead of distance being their big advantage, that power is what is the big advantage out here, because you can land things a little bit softer with that. So if the wind is up, I think we could still see him in the top 10. I would be hard pressed to say top 5 just with the names you just said. You just mentioned Kevin Jones, that guy. Come on, man. He throws so far. That's that. We all knew that. But I mean, at the Majestic, you know, he's hanging out a few in the lead, and then all of a sudden he's just like, "Hey, I'm not going to miss anymore." And then he just doesn't miss anymore. It's incredible. So if he can get on one of those runs, look to see him at the top. But yeah, I think we could see, we could definitely see Philo in that top 10. I'd be hard pressed to put him outside the top 15 or 20 though. He's going to be there. He's
most,
good.
Most definitely. And then just, I mean, all the names we didn't mention. Yeah, I mean, you got to shout out guys like Colton Montgomery too, who just came off a Pro Tour win, you know.
What an awesome Pro Tour win, by the way. Oh my goodness, I loved watching that. We talked right after on the call, the mental game podcast that I do, talking with him about it. Oh man, it was one of the most fun ones that I've done, just because he was so much in his own world that it didn't seem like any exterior stuff affected him. He didn't even know what the scores were. He was just like, "This is my game plan. I'm going to execute my game plan. If I do so, I'll win." And that's what happened. It was awesome.
We're so far off the script. I don't even care right now. Look,
let's get after it, dude. I got time.
All right, good. Glad we got you booked for the afternoon at this point. Okay. First of all, I know that all golfers go, "Oh, I don't pay attention to the score. I don't pay attention to the score. I just play my game." That, you know, it's athlete speak. It's like standard interview copy. And I call bullshit on it almost every time. I've watched Ben check his phone. I've watched so many people check their phone. But Colton really did not know what that putt on the 18th green was for. And it blows my mind.
Homeboy turned off his phone. He was just, he said no, most of the time he's on there, he's kind of checking where he's at. He'll, you know, get on social media, try and distract himself during the rounds, just so he's not so, you know, in a disc golf trance for 4 hours. Instead, he can just focus for a short amount of time and then move on to the next thing. But this time he was like, "Man, I'm just going to commit to my game and do what I need to do. And I got into this debate with a friend of mine here as well. They said if he had, because he ended up winning by two. Is that right? Two or one?
I don't remember off the top. Right now.
I don't remember off the top, but I do remember my buddy was
20 under par, yeah, yeah. 13 for the round.
Yeah, so my buddy was saying, okay, so he won by two, knowing that he could have just laid up and taken a three. Like, why would you not check the scores at that point? And so I asked, I mean, that was something that I was thinking as well. So I asked Colton that question. He said, I'd already made up my mind. I was going for it. So knowing the score only puts extra pressure on me mentally. I was already going to go for the shot, but if I don't think that it means as much as it actually means,
yeah,
I can just commit as I would normally do. I love the play. If it was me, I probably wouldn't have done it just because I think I would have wanted to know, and then I probably would have laid up anyway because I can never reach that hole even if I tried. Right. But it's a long shot, by the way. For all of you guys who are at home and you're like, oh, it's a reachable par four. Okay, go play it. Good luck. Right. But anyway, but I love the play just because he had a game plan and he committed to it. Even with the tournament on the line, he committed to it and it paid off. So that was so much fun to watch. He's got the type of power out here that he can compete as well. I mean, he's not, you know, on that top several people as far as ratings go, but I played with him at Ledgestone last year, and when you hear him throw, it's different. Mm-hmm. It's like standing next to Drew Gibson when he throws. Their speed and pop it's something special.
And it's easy to see, like, Drew has textbook perfect form and like athleticism and grace in his run-up, and Colton does not have that same level.
Sure.
So, like, I think a lot of people look at a guy like him and go, okay, he can probably throw pretty far. But then when you watch him in person, the dude crushes, like, way further than you expect. You know, if you just want to do, like, the eye test for whatever that's worth. But he's got that power in there, and he proved it to me. I'm not the biggest disc guy in the world, so I often have to ask the players, especially like I'm doing commentary. I almost never know what the disc is unless it's super obvious. Like I knew Macbeth threw a destroyer with Innova, like duh, everybody in the world knew that.
Of course.
But I don't know the nitty gritty. But Colton told me that on those par fours that he's eagling, he's throwing a PD, a 10 speed driver.
Correct.
Like, give me a break.
Not full speed.
Wow. 550 feet.
Exactly. There's something to be said for, like you said, we're off script, and I apologize, listeners. If you hate this, then don't unsubscribe. But you can just turn it's whatever. Okay. But I think there's something to be said for form that is efficient, even if it doesn't look perfect. Like you said, like Drew Gibson's form is, it looks how disc golf form is supposed to look. That's when you watch Macbeth throw, you're like, that's what disc golf form is supposed to look like. But then when you watch like Ricky throw, Ricky's form isn't textbook. It's got kind of a weird reach back and a weird follow through, and he still crushes it. Same goes for Colton. Colton has, it's not textbook smooth, but his reach back is so powerful, and then he's got the acceleration to be able to pull that through that, I mean, he can match those elite distance guys, I mean, shot for shot. That's why watching him throw is so great. Tristan Tanner is another example of somebody who's right on the cusp. That guy has throwing figured out. I'm telling you, I watched him throw yesterday, and he was popping out little 67, 68 mile an hour forehands like it wasn't a big deal. And just crushing him.
Can his forehand be the best in the game?
It can. It's not right now, but it's darn close. That's right. Distance-wise, the only person that's competing with him right now, honestly, is Eagle.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of anyone who throws it farther. He's a baller.
He blew my mind at the Las Vegas Challenge. Just like seeing him throw in person. I went specifically over there to make sure I was watching him throw a little bit. I've been hearing a little bit of hype. And his forehand is just far and away number one thing that stands out. So I'm glad.
Bomber.
Yeah. That's incredible. But I think, like you're saying, to kind of bring this back to DDO, it's going to be a lot about who's got that game right now. Like, it doesn't matter if you're in top form, because I don't think we can reasonably expect to see these players with no rust at the complete top of their game. It's just like, who's got to put it together for this weekend to try to just find some rhythm. You know, it kind of ties in all the things we're talking about. We talked about Paige and how as she's learning to tour last year and like kind of figure out the dynamics of tour life and a routine and some regularity, that kind of derailed her competitive season dealing with all that. And then you have to deal with 2020, which is the year of uncertainty, if there ever has been one.
Right.
And, you know, so you, I think you got to kind of look for the favorites of the people who have that kind of repeatable, simple form. You know, what doesn't take too much to execute? What's not too tiring, a big loopy swing or something like that? Those kind of people are going to have an advantage in what is effectively a season restart.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Because, yeah, we're in mid-season, but we're about to find out who's in mid-season form, if that's even possible right now. They're not going to be in competitive mid-season form, but whose game is up to snuff. Yeah, we're gonna find out soon who's been training hard enough to take home the win.
No doubt. Shout out your mental game podcast. I actually didn't know you were doing this, and yeah. I want to subscribe and listen.
Thank you. Yeah. So I run a podcast here at Dynamic Discs called On the Call. It was just kind of a solo venture that I was excited to try out for people who are a little bit more interested in learning about the mental side of disc golf. Everyone knows you have to be able to throw a backhand to compete. You probably need to have some sort of forehand, and you need to be an okay putter to improve. But the biggest leaps and bounds in scores that I've seen from people aren't because of physical training that they've done. It's on the mental side. The first time I went from 980 to 1,000 rated player, it wasn't because I started throwing farther. It was because mentally I toughened up and got to where I could control my emotions on the course and control my thoughts over each shot. And mental game has always fascinated me. So I decided, what better way to learn about the mental game and to talk about it for people than to invite kind of some of our sports top professionals to be on there. So it's right now, you can find us by searching Disc Golf Audio. That's the Dynamic Disc group of podcasts. But yeah, search Disc Golf Audio and you'll pull that up. The most recent one was Colton, because we haven't had disc golf tournaments to play, but the rhythm has been whoever has won a big tournament, I'll try and get in touch with them over the next week and then put it out the following Friday. So I've had Calvin Heimberg on there after he won the NT finale, had Chris Dickerson on there after the Pro Tour finale, had a few of Dynamic Disc players on there, had Nico LaCastro on there, and then, the most recent one was Colton Montgomery. So yeah, On the Call with Robert McCall. Check it out.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Actually, and I did see that you guys just changed it. I listen, when I tune in, I listen in through Spotify, and I did just see that it's Disc Golf Audio. So that's all of your podcasts kind of in one listing. Super cool. Dude, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I was just gonna say, we had, since we were offering some more audio experiences other than just Disc Golf Answer Man, we wanted to make sure that everyone knew it's not just a Disc Golf Answer Man thing. We got a lot of other things that people can check out, from the very, very beginner to the more advanced disc golfer who's trying to, you know, improve one stroke to get them up to 990 or 1,000 or higher than that.
So cool. I love it, and you know, just like all of us that are out here doing disc golf media, it's awesome to see all of the options available to people now. I mean, I was reminiscing with Avery just yesterday on the phone. We were talking about some upcoming stuff, and I just kind of said, okay, it was prompted by this. Stu Mullenberg was posting old photos from the first Disc Golf World Tour event back in 2016, and Avery and I were doing the live show from there, and I just was like, dude, can you believe that was 4 years and five seasons ago, with all the things that have happened since then in the disc golf, in the media sphere specifically? So super cool.
Yeah, exactly right.
I'm definitely going to start tuning in, man. All right. We have gone on for about an hour here. Again, I love talking to you. Please don't be a stranger here, but tell me before you get going, what are you cooking? I know we're both getting into that smoker life, that Rec-Tec lifestyle, man. What's going on?
Yes. Okay. So yeah, I'll call him a good friend now. But a disc golfer, someone who's passionate about disc golf over at Rec-Tec. His name's Greg, Chef Greg there.
Chef Greg.
Yeah, he and I were talking about grills. I've had a little Traeger grill that was fine for us, but we wanted to get a little bit bigger one just so we could do some more stuff. And so I talked with them and ended up getting one of the 700 series ones. I think it's called the RT700. It's a big old fella. And so we got that, set it all up. We've done... The first one was just like shrimp for shrimp tacos and bacon and stuff like that. We reverse seared a couple of ribeyes. That was fantastic. Oh my goodness, fantastic. Then we did a pork butt a couple weekends ago, and then most recently did some pizzas on there. So if I can use it instead of an oven, I'm using it instead of an oven, and it makes a huge difference. And then slightly not related, but still cooking a little bit. This is what I thought you were going to ask. For the DD Open, be looking for an announcement from us very, very soon about the coverage of the event, because it's going to be a little bit different than other events have been, but I 100% promise it will be worth it. So at first, when you hear the announcement, you're going to be like, oh, come on. And then eventually you'll be like, oh, that makes sense. And this is going to be awesome. I wish we were releasing this later so I could give you more details. Yes. Since we aren't, that's where we're at. Yes. But it's cooking.
That is coming. And for everybody that listens to the Upshot regularly, they know that we kind of record the interviews. We usually record the interviews before we do the rest of the show. So I was kind of hoping to hear in between this interview, because I didn't hear before we started. I was kind of hoping to hear between now and then. So hopefully we can announce. If not, yeah, stay tuned to all the places that you can find information. Obviously, UltiWorld will carry it. Stay tuned to Dynamic Dis for that, because
it's going to be worthwhile.
Yeah, real contracts involved, can't talk about it, you know what I mean? Those kind of things. We're getting serious in here.
That's exactly right. And then we've got other stuff working on the DD side, but you guys hear that from us all the time. So yeah, just find us on social media. I've got actually a really cool program that's going to be launching next week. I can't say really anything else about that either, but yeah, lots of stuff in the works for sure.
All right, and in the meantime, I'm gonna call you up and ask for some tips on that reverse seared ribeye. Because got into some brisket this past weekend, and I am hooked. I mean, I don't mean for this to be a commercial for RecTech, but at the same time, I don't care, because I love the grill, and it's really made life very easy to look like I know what I'm doing. So, yeah, man, we're going to hook up on some barbecue and some disc golf in the near future.
I'm about it, man. That sounds good.
All right. Have fun out there this week. Enjoy. I know it's going to be crazy. It's going to be different. But it will always be exciting. Robert McCall, Marketing Manager at Dynamic Dis. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jamie. And UltiWorld listeners, appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
All right. We will be right back. Stay tuned. It's The Upshot. The Upshot is presented by Pound Disc Golf. I'm rocking a pound bag. Charlie's rocking a pound bag. My wife, now rocking a pound bag. We got her a custom Carlton for her birthday earlier this year. She absolutely loves it. It's incredibly comfortable. Get to customize everything inside and out. So much room for frisbees, jackets, water bottles, anything you need to be out on the course in style. Looking good, feeling comfortable, throwing those birdies. Get a pound bag on your back. PoundDiscGolf.com. All right, that's pretty much going to do it. Thank you so much to Robert McCall for, talk about everything under the sun. Some barbecue, golf and Emporia, and pretty much anything. We're going to try to have him back more. I just appreciate his insights and the way he talks about golf. All right, remember, get your comments in, upshot@ultiworld.com. Let us know what you think. Let us know your reactions. What are some of your takeaways after you will have seen what goes on? Who's got the rust still left to shake off? Who is in the driver's seat controlling their destiny? There's no worlds to worry about this year, but Pro Tour has now become the main game in town. Who's going to make the championship? Who's going to be ready for USDGC, the only remaining major on the calendar? That's kind of where all roads lead to at this point. It's all going to come down to October. So let us know what you thought. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week right here on The Upshot.